From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Doctor Is In podcast. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and we have Joel.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, I have a problem.
Sorry to hear that. Only some kinds of problems that I can handle.
Well, let me describe it. On 10 meters, between roughly 28,300 and 28,500, I have, separated about every 25 kilohertz, I have birdies. I have a signal, and it's not extremely powerful, but it's definitely there. I would say maybe an S1 signal level, something like that. I'm guessing it's coming from something within my house, I assume. Could be a neighbor's house. I haven't begun really to try to track it down. So before I do, what's the doctor's recommendation? How should I approach that?
Well, it's good to eliminate the easy-to-eliminate potential sources first and kind of work your way out in a kind of a spherical fashion. So starting at your house is usually a good idea because a surprisingly large number of problems originate in your house with your electronic equipment or your it can be your furnace controller. It could be a lot of things. So the way to find out is set up your radio so it can run from a 12-volt battery. It doesn't. If you're just using receiver, it doesn't need to be much of a battery, like the kind used for UPS power systems.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And run your radio from that. Turn off the main breakers in your house. And that will eliminate everything in your house.
It will also reset my clocks. And
yes, all of those things will happen. The buttons on your kitchen radio will have to be reset and all that sort of stuff. So that's the downside. But it's really the best way to go is to eliminate everything in your house and see if the noise is still there.
Mm-hmm.
If the noise goes away, it is something from your house. And that's something that, fortunately, is usually the easiest thing to fix because it's completely under your control. So then what you do is you turn all your circuit breakers off, turn your main breaker back on, and turn on one circuit at a time until you find out where the noise is coming from. And I suggest you don't stop when you first find it, but you keep going just in case there's more than one source. Sometimes you have two of something around, and it helps to make sure that you get rid of all of them and find all of them and get rid of them. So once you find what circuits it's on, you can go and start unplugging things until you get rid of the, until the noise goes away. And then whatever it is you unplug that makes the noise go away is probably the culprit.
What if it's my wife's television set?
Well, that's a within the realm of negotiation, I would say. But even if it, I mean, that raises a good point. In many cases, you can actually control the interference by only using the offending device when you're not on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you could even remote control it from the shack and not tell your wife why it is her TV doesn't work at certain times. But if you can't, you can actually start filtering the device, finding out how it's getting to you. Chances are it's radiating typically from the power connection. The power line acts like an antenna and radiates out. It's picked up by your antenna and comes into the station. You can determine that also by removing your antenna connection and making sure that the noise goes away. If it doesn't, it's coming in some other avenue.
Yes.
For example, it could couple through the power lines, through your power supply. Very unlikely, but it could get there that way. Could couple between... Well, anything. It could be, you make sure it's not your equipment, too. You can have a computer in the shack with you.
Oh, yes.
Or a packet router for your local area network or whatever that generates noise. And it isn't just the device itself. In many cases, it's the switching power supply that operates the device that's the problem. So you need to isolate, where the problem is. But if it's something that's within your house, as I say, it's within your control. Typically, putting ferrite toroids on the power line going from the device as close to the device as you can with as many turns on it of the power cord as you can will go a long way towards eliminating the noise getting out into the power system and then radiating.
Now what about when you talk about inside the house versus outside the house? You might recall we had a discussion once about the fact that in my particular case, I was seeing an elevated noise floor on 40 meters and on a couple of other HF bands. At the time, I suspected it might have been outside the house, might be, say, a noisy power line, something of that nature. If you do think that it's potentially outside the house, what would you recommend as far as hunting it down from that point?
Well, there are a number of techniques that you can use. First of all, if it's outside the house, one thing you can do is try to establish a pattern. Is it only on during working hours? Is it only on in the evening when people have lights on? Is it only on when people are watching television in the next house? You can look through their window and see what they're watching, and it might give you a clue. Try not to get shot when you do that. But you can get an idea of a pattern. Is it when the factories are open down the street? Is it when stores are open with the illuminated neon signs? You know, try to establish a connection between something else that'll help you figure out what's going on. So if it's, if it happens during school hours and there's a school nearby, good chance it's in the school, and you can focus there. Once you kind of have an idea of where to look, a very handy test device is a small shortwave transistor radio that you can carry around with you.
Just like a consumer-grade radio.
The only tricky thing about that, actually, what's best is to use your to have an HF mobile rig or a mobile rig you can put in the car, because an S-meter is very helpful. The problem with just listening is, because of the AGC action in the receiver, the noise often sounds about the same, even if you find it, even if it gets weaker or stronger, because the AGC changes the gain. So it tries to make it always sound the same. Whereas if you have an S-meter, you can actually get a good metric on how strong the signal is.
Yes.
And you can wander around the neighborhood and try to find out where a noise that matches the one that you're hearing in your receiver is the loudest. And wherever it is, chances are that's where it's coming from. Can be confusing, because if it's being carried on the power lines, of course, it'll tend to be anywhere along the power system. So you can spend a lot of time chasing the wrong end of the tail, as it were, because the source may be quite a ways distant from the signal that you're getting from your local power lines.
Well, that brings up a good point. I mean, does it, when you speak of distance, does it pertain to the band? In other words, if it's noise on 160 meters, let's say, is there the potential that that could be coming from a much more distant source being carried on the power lines than, say, something that you're picking up on 10 or 15 meters?
It's hard to say, but I think that the signals on 10 meters will tend to be more directional and perhaps more focused in particular areas. That's another point. If you have a rotary antenna on 10 meters, you can actually get a bearing to where the signal's strongest. So give you kind of a axis to walk on with your radio to try to find it. Also, if it does respond to in a particular direction, chances are it is removed from your property. If it's right on the property and coming up towards the antenna from the bottom, it probably won't matter what direction it's pointed. So it's kind of, you can use that as a clue also.
Yes. The noise sources, typically, that hams will encounter these days, in your experience, what seems to be the chief offenders of those? Certain devices, perhaps, or?
There are classical devices that do that sort of thing. Switching power supplies, which can be even the little wall warts, are notorious for causing that problem. These people design these things, and then they try to make them as inexpensive as possible to produce by the millions. So what they do is they make them that it works, and they take out a part and see if it still works. And they keep taking out parts until it stops working, and they put the last one back in. And what they've done in the process, and this is really true, if you look at computer power supplies, for example, you can look at the PC boards, and you'll see part designations with no parts in them. And those are the ones that, all they do is cut down on the interference going out on the power line.
So the heck with those.
So we'll just rip those out, and we can save $3 per supply or 3 cents a supply. And if we sell a million of them, that's a good bonus for the executives that are pushing the program. They used to do that in American TVs, too, I understand. I had a friend who worked for RCA many years ago, and that's exactly what they did. And somebody would say, I pulled out this resistor, and it still works, and everybody would applaud. And, you know, they sold so many millions of them that 5 cents a piece times a million adds up.
But isn't it true that some power supplies are certified, or they're supposed to be certified, for a certain amount of spectral purity?
Yeah, and I'm not sure about the details of all the regulations about this. The folks in the ARL lab, Mike Gruber and particularly W1MG, knows this stuff backwards and forwards. But there are different standards, and they apply to different kinds of equipment and over different frequency ranges. We're talking about things that are unintended radiators, which means that they're not supposed to radiate at all. So you'd say, well, if it's radiating anything, it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And that's true, but they're allowed to radiate a little bit as long as it doesn't interfere with people. In general, if there is a problem, it's up to the user of the equipment to solve the problem, which is unfortunate because they're not the people who designed it or sold it, mm-hmm. and they're stuck with this thing that's interfering with somebody, and it's their job to fix it in some way or get rid of it. And, yes. of course, they don't understand that, and they paid good money for that, and they're not about to not use it. So it's a really tough situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't really go across the street to your neighbor if you really think that that's where the noise is coming from and go knocking on the door and demanding that they turn off their computer, turn off their TV, or what have you, correct?
Well, you can do that, but it's not advised because you probably won't be too successful. It's much better to sort of work up to it slowly and try to establish some kind of a groundwork with it. That's a whole different, that's not a technical issue, that's a political
diplomatic issue.
But the more gentle you can be in this process, the better. And you better be darn sure that you know what you're talking about, because otherwise you can get in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different standards for different kinds of equipment, and they all have different requirements, and sometimes we just have to coexist as best we can. And the other thing we have is most equipment, ham equipment now, has reasonably good noise blankers and noise cancelers that can deal with different kinds of noise sources using digital signal processing and sometimes other techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually eliminate them in your receiver if you spend enough time at it. Unfortunately, they tend to not make the audio sound quite as good as it would,
yes.
if you weren't doing it. But if it isn't, if you can't hear it anyway because of the noise, then you're not losing much.
That's right. Now, you bring up a good point, too. You've seen noise-canceling devices. Can you explain just briefly how they work precisely?
Well, there are a number of different approaches. One of them, the actual canceling idea, is kind of a clever arrangement. What you do is you have another receiver with a antenna, and actually just the front end of a, not a receiver, but just a front end RF amplifier stage, let's say, with a short antenna. And you can adjust the amplitude and the phase of the signal that comes out of that. And that mixes with the signal that from your antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have that set up so it's the same amplitude as the interfering signal that you're dealing with, and set the phase so it's 180 degrees out of phase, the result will be a cancellation of the interfering signal. And that can work very well. I don't know that it can deal simultaneously with multiple sources. It's kind of a limitation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a single source, can do a good job. Those are made by a number of different companies. And there was an article, which I have not been able to find, from a QST. I remember, goes back many years ago to my days at the MITRE Corporation. We had a technical staff member in our radio club there who gave a talk about that device when it was first introduced. He wrote the article describing it in QST, and I can't remember his name or the title of the article, and I haven't been able to find that. But it's been around. So that was in the...
it's been around for a number of years.
That was in the mid to late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of people have picked up on that and manufacture such devices.
The,
That's one type. I guess another type, to continue mm-hmm. with the question, on the other end of the receiver, if your receiver doesn't have digital signal processing, you can get outboard audio digital signal processing units that will actually do that kind of processing outside the radio, between the audio output and your headphones or speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be quite effective, too. They're usually not quite as effective as if they were earlier in the receiver, built into the receiver. But if your receiver doesn't have them, this is a good option, so it's viable.
So in other words, what you're saying is if you can't locate the interference, if you can't eliminate the interference, then your final option is to live with it in some way.
Absolutely.
Through digital signal processing or whatever means you can just to suppress it.
Yeah, and if you have a receiver, if the noise is a single tone, many receivers have good notch filters that can take out a single tone completely. 60, 70 dB, you can't even hear it. Either automatic or manually adjustable. By the way, going over noise sources, we didn't really get to the full list of them, but there are a mm-hmm. couple of other classic ones. Fluorescent light ballasts we mentioned, but there's some particular kinds of lights that cause problems. The Grolux category of lights designed to help plants grow.
yes,
are somehow responsible for a lot of interference. And exactly why that is, I don't know, but they've been shown to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people use them in their gardens, and they also show up a lot in indoor marijuana cultivation facilities. So there's some parts of the country have more of these than others.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
No, I wouldn't think. But anyway, so that's another source. There are some controllers in washing machines mm-hmm. and furnaces that are notorious. And usually the newer they are and the fancier they are, the more likely they are to be a problem. The old-time on-off switch controllers and standard motor arrangements were less noisy than the new pulsed arrangements, which can control speed and do other things.
Yes.
But also in the process generate a lot of interference. So there's all kinds of things that do it.
What about the new LED bulbs that are becoming popular?
Again, that's one of those things in which the bulb itself is not a problem, as far as I know. But oftentimes there's a power supply. Now, the LED bulbs run on DC. Mm-hmm. They're plugged into an AC socket, so you have to have a power supply, and it can be a switching power supply that generates the DC from the AC, and that can put out harmonics of the switching frequency.
Mm.
Typical switching power supplies are in the somewhere in the hundreds of kilohertz range.
Yes.
So you often get multiples of that frequency throughout the spectrum if they're not carefully filtered. And again, if you're making gazillions of light bulbs and you can save a nickel on each one by not putting in any filtering,
yes,
you get a hero metal at the factory, and just the 200,000 hams that hate you don't really matter that much.
I know the ARRL lab a couple of years ago did a testing survey of a number of different brands of LED bulbs. Fortunately, they didn't find a lot of emissions from that group. But of course, now they're much, much more popular and much more widespread. I mean, I have several in my house. I get to see any interference or hear any interference from those, but I don't know how that applies to the entire market out there.
I don't either. And the fact that they've gone to large numbers means the competition is getting tough.
Mm-hmm.
Cost cutting is more and more important to the companies, and that often leads to more interference. So, you know, it could happen, but mm-hmm. but it doesn't, as I say, it doesn't have to happen. It just, depending on how they're designed and how much thought they've given to that aspect of it, may make a big difference. And again, there are different kinds of requirements for commercial, industrial versus residential. So somebody could make bulbs that would be satisfactory in a commercial environment. And if your local big box retailer starts selling them to the general public because they're cheaper, mm-hmm. all of a sudden you've got a big problem. So you got to, you know, these things can change over time.
Well, at least if we encounter interference, we'll know how to find it, right?
Well, it's often takes a lot longer than talking about it.
That's right. Well, thank you, Joel. That was very educational.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.